Confessions of a Former Fangirl podcast.
The podcast where two former fangirls try to turn a fake fan into a real one.
I am so excited for this week's topic, so we're just going to tell you now.
Me too.
It is Sherlock.
Dun dun dun. This is a really big one. I think we said that about Doctor Who too, but it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, we're probably going to say that about all the topics, yeah. But it is a big one.
It is. And there's so much nuance here. There's years and years of history. It's going
to
be great.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited to learn because yeah. I know nothing about it besides my man Andrew Scott.
Oh, and I think was oh, he's yeah. huge.
Oh, he is in it.
Yes, we'll get into it.
Yeah, before we get into our main topic, it is time for Confession Corner.
Confession. All right. Aaron and Karen, who wants to confess something first?
I gotta think about it.
Juliana, why don't you go first?
For anyone who doesn't know, in this segment, we talk about what we are obsessed with this week.
That is correct, Aaron, we do. And this week, I am obsessed with the new season of Big Mouth.
Mm. Oh. Yes.
It is, guys, it's really, really good. It's really, really good. And there was this line that I texted Karen, Aaron, and our producer, Madeline, last night in our group chat. And this one character said, on the first day of school, I will be wearing a top hat. And on the second day, I will be wearing a cape. Said exactly like that. No. Said exactly like that. And I texted that to our group chat and I was like, I hope this is not offensive. I truly say this in love, but that really feels like fandom culture to me.
It is. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And it was received well.
Yeah.
It was received
that's well. Like middle school,
yes.
Early high school fandom energy, like wearing a costume to school.
I'm pretty sure one time I posted a Facebook status in like 2012 that was like, tomorrow to school, I'm going to wear my Sherlock shirt and my like Harry Potter hat and I'm going to walk around the school singing show tunes. So it's very much that energy.
Wait, one more quick question.
The big three.
Were you wearing rainbow suspenders as well?
No, you know what? The rainbow suspenders didn't come along until I came out next year, like the next year. But they were a staple of my high school wardrobe for sure.
I saw those a lot in middle school.
Oh, yes.
I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yes, huge.
Yeah.
Hot topic, huge for me in middle school, high school.
I was afraid of Hot Topic.
I was severely afraid of it because they had this distinct smell in the mall that I went to. That was only the Hot Topic.
Yep.
And it smelled like one of those Halloween wigs. And I just was not about it.
No, that's,
like,
yeah.
This smells weird.
It always smells like latex and teen angst in Hot Topic. Ooh. Shout out Hot Topic. I spent a lot of hours in there in my youth.
Wow.
That's a good one. I have not seen Big Mouth season 4 yet, but I will be watching it.
I think it's a really good show. I think that there are moments where it gets to be too much and you're like, this is too much for me. And I totally understand when people say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, one, that's the point of it. And like, that's like at least how I felt when I was that age. But also, this season specifically, they just, like, really level up. And it's just so good. Like, some of the stuff that they say is, you're just like, and the way it, like, breaks the fourth wall, it knows exactly what it is. It just is, like, I just watch it, and I'm like, this is just so stupid, but so creative. And whenever I say something is so stupid, I mean that as, like,
with love.
Truly the highest compliment.
Yes.
Truly the highest compliment.
Yes.
So that's what I'm obsessed with this week.
Love that. They have a great team of writers. I would love to write for Big Mouth one day.
There's so many great people.
Nick Kroll, if you're listening, yeah. Nick Kroll, friend of the pod.
And a great
cast. Please hire
Nick
me
Kroll
as a writer.
Nick Kroll is a friend of the pod.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, Nick Kroll also posted this photo of him from his summer camp of him and one of his friends doing, like, they were either singing along or they were supposed to be impersonating Freddie Mercury singing Don't Stop Me Now. And I was like, that's literally my favorite song. This is one of my favorite TV shows. This is just, it makes my heart so happy.
I love that.
It does. So what are you all obsessed with?
So mine this week is Parks and Rec, which makes it sound like I'm late to the party, but I'm not. My mom is, and we've been rewatching Parks and Rec together. It's her first time watching it.
Thank God.
We're on season 5, and I just like, it's such a good show. It really it's is. So good. I love Amy Poehler so much, and it's just so fun to like go back and just watch a show that's just like really wholesome and like has good people who like care about things. And it's crazy watching it now because like we just watched the episode where Joe Biden guest stars. And it's just like crazy.
I forgot that happened. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
And she like has a conniption, and then there's also an episode where Joe Biden is president. And you're like,
It's
our
crazy.
Producer Madeline is making a shocked face. I know.
That's wild. There's also,
and it's that around this time, by the way.
Do you remember that episode?
Yeah. Crazy.
Where Ben is just deathly afraid of cops.
Yeah.
I think about that all the time because of
cops.
Policemen. Because they have to go to that like fundraiser thing.
Yeah.
So they can convince like the chief to give Leslie an endorsement for a councilwoman.
Ben, and Ben is just like such a good character. Oh, so good.
Oh my god. It's it's just, it's such a good show. And like after watching like Happiest Season and seeing like Aubrey Plaza now, and then going back to her like at Parks and Rec, and she's like so young, and now she's like so sophisticated, and like you're just like, this woman is incredible.
I'm in love with her.
And also funny to watch it with all like the Chris Pratt discourse that is going on Twitter. Also really, it's just a great show.
Part of the reason why I love those shows like Parks and Rec, The Office, New Girl, I mean, or just in general, like half-hour comedies that center around a group of people like that are friends or coworkers or whatever, they, for some reason, do sexual tension better than any sort of
I was literally thinking about this. Ben and Leslie is like such a good enemies to lovers storyline, because they start off and Leslie hates Ben, and it's like enemies to lovers and also forbidden romance, because they're not supposed to date each other because he's her boss. It's just like such a good example of that trope.
Wow,
it plays out so beautifully.
I bet there's
so much good
Ben and Leslie fan fiction on the internet.
Oh my god,
I'm gonna look it
up. I would love
this.
To read some like Ben and Leslie like AU, like alternate universe.
Oh.
Wait. AU as... we need to stop. What is that?
I just thought what it stands for, alternate universe.
Yeah.
So please, it's like, it's like when people write fan fiction, it's like if you take two like pre-existing characters and place them in an alternate universe in like different circumstances. So it's like if somebody wrote like a fan fiction about like, I don't know why this first thing came to mind, Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy like falling in love, but they go to like a normal high school in like America in like 2020.
Dreary,
that would be
Dreary's
like an alternate,
that'd
be an alternate universe situation.
And is AU, like, do people say AU or do people say alternate universe?
AU.
AU.
That's what it's, it's like the letters.
There's abbreviations for absolutely everything.
Yeah.
In fan fiction, and it's its own language, so.
AU, I don't know why I thought of this, is the,
AU.
No.
Ayo,
no. No. It's the periodic symbol for gold. Did you know that?
You are correct.
You're right.
Yeah.
Smart girl shit.
That is funny.
Anyways.
Smart girl shit.
Anyway, that's mine.
My chemistry shit. Okay. I love that. I have thought of mine, and I'll be brief because I feel like we should get into the topic, but my confession, my obsession of the week is Easy A, the 2010 film starring Emma Stone. I recently rewatched it the other night, and I think it's like in the caliber of movies like Mean Girls or what's another example, like Clueless, I guess, like movies about
like teen
girls who like
comedies
are coming of age. That's also like a comedy, and there's some level of like satire, not satire, camp. Whatever. You know what
I'm
saying.
Satire and camp, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, both.
So I think it's right up there with all those movies, but it doesn't get the credit that it deserves. And I don't know why. I think I think maybe it has something to do with Emma Stone hate. And people just kind of, like, don't like her after La La Land, but...
But she's so good in Easy A.
She's so good. Like, it's like, her best so work.
She's so good.
And also, like, everyone's in that movie. Penn Badgley is in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Amanda Bynes doing incredible work.
She gives an amazing performance. Stanley Tucci as her father. Yeah, I think that's
easily her... so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Patricia Clarkson is the mom, right?
Yes.
Yes, she is.
And Lisa Kudrow is in it.
Oh my god, that's like the guidance counselor. It's such a good movie.
And it's like, there are lines in it that like are very clever. Like it's like surprisingly well written. And I would encourage anyone and everyone to go back and give it another watch because I had a great time.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
There's so many iconic scenes.
Yeah.
There are. The thing with, like, movies like Mean Girls is I feel like they got a resurgence, like, 10 or 15 years after they came out. So I feel like, you know what? We might just be on the precipice of Easy A resurgence.
I hope.
And I also will say that I feel like Easy A is probably one of Amanda Bynes' best performances.
So good.
Amanda Bynes, she's
fucking funny.
If she had kind of gone off the rails, she would have been the star of the decade. She's so good in everything. She's so good.
I miss her. I hope she's doing better.
I hope she's okay.
But yeah, I mean, it was that role was so great because she usually was like the protagonist a lot of the time, and to see her play like the villain,
so good, and like a Jesus so different villain
from herself. Yeah,
oh amazing. My god.
Oh, yeah,
love that.
Oh my
movie.
Gosh! Well, these confessions were so fun. Love but that. I think that we have to go to the real educational part. The real bulk.
The meat and potatoes.
The meat and potatoes. The main course, if you will.
Yes.
I'm so excited to learn about Sherlock this week, everyone.
Oh, strap in, Juliana.
I'm so excited to talk about it. I was like, went back on my old Tumblr last night and was kind of scrolling through like, I was like going through like the Sherlock tag and trying to like refresh my memory. Yeah. And it was all coming back to me.
There's a lot. I would say, so obviously Sherlock is part of the Super Hulock trinity of fandoms. Yes.
The Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity. Oh, God.
Of fandoms.
Yeah, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost of fandoms.
Wait. Quick question. Yeah. Do you say Holy Ghost or Holy Spirit?
I say Holy Ghost, but I am not religious at all, so I don't know.
I guess it depends.
What is correct.
I mean, sometimes I think Holy Ghost is like funny to say because I usually say Holy Spirit. We were raised Catholic. Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. It's that's different like what they churches tell you say to different say.
Things.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I think like Holy Ghost is like fun to say though.
It is really fun. To say.
I think it's more succinct.
Okay, like in this context, like I would say Holy Ghost because it's just like funny.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it is for that bit.
Okay, so anyway, yes, Sherlock is part of the Super Hulock trifecta, It's an interesting one because I would say in terms of like fandom craziness, it was as big as Doctor Who but had not nearly as much material.
It's a really
weird situation with Sherlock. Erin, do you want to explain more about that?
Yeah, well, first let's say for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but Sherlock is a British crime television series based on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes detective stories. So it's set in present day, and it's basically kind of like a modern reimagination of like Sherlock Holmes. So
it's not like a Doctor Who situation where there's one character that like changes over time and like that's a singular character. It's like a modern day Sherlock as if the character was born today and living today.
And so like... Great. Something that's interesting is, like, he's not, like, a detective himself. Like, he's not, like, independent. Like, he's a consulting detective. So he's, like, hired out by the police to, like, help them.
Scotland Yard.
Solve crimes.
Yeah.
By Scotland Yard?
Mm-hmm. That's the, like...
Yeah, or, like, it's, like, the metropolitan, whatever, police. And then, but also it goes, like, further and further into, like, the British government because he's, like...
So is Scotland Yard, like, a part of the British government, or...
Yeah, I think like, Scotland Yard is, like, sort of equivalent to the FBI.
Yeah, and it's, that's...
It's, like, in England.
They
it's
have
not,
a whole...
It's not in Scotland. It's called Scotland Yard.
Well, that...
I think we could be wrong. I apologize to British people.
I don't know. I'm okay. Stupid. I don't know what it means.
Anyway.
But it is definitely part of the show. And it's, they're always, he's always like in sort of a rivalry with Scotland Yard because they like don't like his methods and he wants to do whatever he wants, you know. Typical Got Sherlock thing.
Because he's like a tortured genius or whatever. That sort of thing.
Oh, God. It's honestly, it's so cringy.
Sherlock is always played by one person. Correct?
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch, yeah.
Okay.
Plays Sherlock.
That, yeah.
This
yeah.
is not, and this so, is separate from Doctor Who entirely. There's no, like, lineage of Sherlocks. It's just, like, yeah. one series where the same people play the same people the whole time.
Great.
Yeah. yeah. It was created by Stephen Moffat, who was the showrunner of Doctor Who at the same exact time.
Yes.
As
when was it created? That's
in
so interesting.
In 2009, about, they was when they shot the pilot, I think.
Oh.
And then they had
earlier
to,
than I thought.
Yeah, the first episode aired in 2010.
Crazy.
Yeah. But I know they shot this pilot that was like very different, very different vibe than what the show turned out to be. And the BBC was like, you need to shoot a new one.
That's really funny.
But
interesting.
Yeah, but yeah. So Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss, who was also a writer on Doctor Who, created
was also
the show
in Sherlock. As
and he played
his brother.
Mycroft, who is Sherlock's brother.
Yeah.
They like were both writing for Doctor Who. And Doctor Who shoots in Cardiff in Wales. So they had to like commute from London to Wales, and they were coming up with the concept for the show, like as they were going on these like train rides together to Cardiff. And that's like where they came up with the concept.
Mm-hmm.
That's so sweet. And I also feel like so
besties.
British.
Yeah.
That's like so.
That's also like these two men were really, they were the kings of fandom in this era.
So they were, like, shooting and creating, like, the two biggest, like, shows
mm-hmm.
at the same time. Because Stephen Moffat was the showrunner. He was just a writer for Doctor Who, and then he became the showrunner in 2009. And he was a showrunner from 2009 until 2017. And Sherlock was shooting from 2010 until 2017. So he was showrunner for these two shows at the exact same time.
This man had a busy
that
decade.
That sounds like an actual nightmare.
I know.
Yeah. So, yes. I'm literally getting so stressed out thinking about that. Oh my God.
But good for him, you know? He was a working man. He kept busy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's about modern day Sherlock.
Yeah,
what
Sherlock Holmes.
Were like, how did you all get exposed to it, these fandoms? Was it through Doctor Who?
I actually don't. I was thinking about it last night, and I don't remember how I first started watching Sherlock. But I'm pretty sure, because Doctor Who came first, and then I'm pretty sure I just saw, like, GIFs of Sherlock on Tumblr and was like, what is this? And then I started watching it that way. I'm pretty sure it was Tumblr introduced me.
Yeah, same. Like, it was just being on Tumblr for Doctor Who. There's so much, like, crossover in those fandoms.
Yeah.
So people who I followed who were, like, Doctor Who blogs would post stuff about Sherlock. And then I was like, oh, this show has, like, a huge fandom, too. And it looks really good. So I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
And that's basically, yeah. They're, like, very connected. There's a
and
huge...
And it was also, like, I was seeing a lot of John Locke stuff, which we haven't mentioned yet. But, like,
we'll
the
get
main...
into it.
The main ship was, like, all over my Tumblr dashboard, and I was like, what is this? And then
was that a combination of, like, wait, also, first of all, let's talk about ships. I think I know what they are, but can we...
yes, yes, yes. So...
Can we go into further detail?
Yes.
well, so, a ship... The word ship is just a shortening of the word relationship. And so, if you ship two people together, that means that you like the idea of them being together and you like
in a romantic
relationship. Like a romantic sexual relationship.
Yeah. So ship
specifically
became a verb.
Okay. And it's specifically for romantic and sexual engagement.
Yes. I mean, you can say that you like ship people as friends, but like that's not really as common.
Yeah.
That's not what people are looking for.
Okay.
Juliana, do you know what OTP stands for?
I think, is it one true pair?
Yes! Like,
I'm
who's
so
your
proud
OTP?
Of you.
Yes!
One true pairing. So
that's
like your number
one
ship.
I learned
ship.
From Tumblr.
Yeah, I love
that. And that's like your number one ship because.
Your number
I
one.
Also,
yeah.
I will say, this is a confession, listeners. I did think that shipping for a while meant that, like, you wanted them to, like, sail away together. Like, and go on a ship.
Oh, no.
Well, there, I mean, because of the term, like, there's a lot of, like, puns about shipping. So, like, yeah. if a ship becomes canon, and as we know, canon means, like, it happens for real, like, in the show. Mm-hmm. If a ship becomes canon, people would be like, oh my gosh, like, our ship has finally sailed. Like, so a lot of, or, like, the ship, if a character gets together with a character, like, you didn't ship them with, you were like, oh my god, our ship has, like, sunk or whatever, like, shit, yeah, like that. So there became, like, a lot of, like, boat puns.
Yeah.
That had to do with, yeah, shipping.
A lot of nautical terminology.
And then, like, people would make stuff about, like, especially, like, with canon being a phrase, too. You're like, they're shot with a cannon. I don't know. Like, stuff. Yeah. It was stuff like that.
See, this is why really fandoms just, like,
there's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
It's just so stressful for me.
Aren't, like, if you try and, like, learn all of it at once now, it's just very, very overwhelming. Like, you really gotta be, like,
yeah. I mean, in it. Yeah. We were, like, learning all this, Karen, as we went along, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one more question.
Yes.
And I have a feeling that this is going to lead us into more of, like, the main course, if you will.
Okay.
Were there any ships, because there were the showrunners, which, for any of our listeners that don't know what a showrunner is, it's basically the person that is in charge of the show and, like, is the head of the team of writers and, like, does a lot, is basically the person of in charge of the show. Mm-hmm. Because they shared the same showrunners, were there ever crossover episodes, and were there ever crossover ships that happened?
Between Sherlock and Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Crossover ships, absolutely.
Yeah, people really wanted a Sherlock, like, Doctor Who crossover. And when I was, like, going through my old Tumblr, I saw lots of, like, fan art that was, like, Doctor Who with Sherlock characters, and also some ones that also was, like, and Supernatural characters.
Yeah. I think that's,
I
really
can't,
like,
remember anything, like, specifically
of the, like, Super Hulock phenomenon, is that people were like, well, these shows are all really good, and, like, two of them have the same showrunner, so, like, why not do a crossover episode? It's possible. And then once the showrunners kind of caught on to that, the fact that that was happening online, they were, like, they would always kind of, like, tease that a crossover episode was going to happen and then just never do it, which was so cruel.
Yeah. there was, but, yeah. I saw a screenshot of, I forget what episode, there was an episode of Doctor Who where Matt Smith, the 11th Doctor, wore, like, a Sherlock Holmes, like, a classic Sherlock Holmes, like, costume, like, outfit. I don't know why he was wearing it, but people were like, oh my god, what does this mean? It didn't mean anything.
It meant nothing. Nothing ever meant anything on Tumblr, really. There would be so much speculation, and, like, 99% of the time it would end up being nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I really wanted to talk about, the Sherlock fandom specifically, is how much speculation about things there was, because there was so little content to work with, that people would just take things and, like, run with it and be like, what does this mean? What does that mean? What does this mean?
So how often would shows come out?
Okay, so this is the thing about Sherlock. Let's get into that now. So the first episode, the first season, aired in 2010, and the last one aired in 2017. But there are only three seasons.
There's
of the
four.
Show.
There's
and
four.
There are four?
I never watched the fourth one. Oh, I
fully never saw the fourth neither. One. But so there are three episodes in each season. And each episode's, like, an hour long.
They're, like, 90 minutes almost. So each
minutes,
episode
yes.
is like a
so,
movie.
Wait, so three episodes
That's
in
each
it. Season?
Yeah.
Yes. And between each season, That's there it? Would be, like, 2 years of time. Before the next one came out. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Let me give you these facts and figures. So, in total, there are only 13 episodes of Sherlock. That's it. From 2010 to 2017, 13 episodes were made.
Yeah.
Four seasons, three episodes in each season, and then there was a special that was also 90 minutes long.
And this is, like, a wildly popular TV show.
Meanwhile, Doctor Who, in comparison... The show, I mean, Doctor Who has been on since 1963, But in comparison, Doctor Who has 861 episodes. So, like, it's, like, crazy. If you compare the fandoms, like, I would argue that they were as big as each other. Like, there was probably, like, a similar amount of people who were fans of both. Yet, like, Doctor Who has, like, 50 years of content to, like, go through, whereas Sherlock had 13 episodes.
And there would be full years where, like, no new content would be out at all. And so it'd just be, like, recycling the same content on Tumblr. Like, I feel like that's why this fandom specifically was so crazy, is that, like, we were just fed so little of the actual show that we had to, like,
it's just wild speculation constantly.
Yeah.
And, like, to the point of, like, driving that themselves insane, I feel like. People would come up with, like, crazy ideas.
Yes.
That. But was most of the fandom on Tumblr?
I would say, yeah.
Yes.
Like, versus Twitter or, like.
I mean, Tumblr was the big one.
Other different platforms.
Tumblr was the hub.
Because I'm looking at, I was looking at.
The hub of all
fandoms. I'd say, yeah, like, the height of fandom, like, presence on Tumblr was, like, 2011, 2012 until, like, 2014, 2015. And so Sherlock season 2 came out in 2012 and season 3 came out in 2014. So it was, like, those, like, 2 years, or, like, I guess that was 3 years, 2012, 2013, 2014. But, like, that was, like, the peak. During that time, the fandom was waiting for that next season to drop in 2014.
I remember that so specifically. That was during the time that I was part of the fandom. And it was, like, it was also just, it was so insane because at the end of season 2, I believe, is when
Sherlock spoiler alert!
Jumps off a building.
Spoiler alert, okay, in effect.
Well, at the end of season 2, and this is based on what actually happens in the books of Sherlock Holmes. Like, this is how Arthur Conan Doyle kind of, like, got bored and annoyed with writing. So he was like, I'm going to kill off both of my main characters. Yeah. So Sherlock jumps off of a building.
And you see the blood, like, he is supposed to kill himself. Because there's Moriarty is, like, the big main villain who is played by your man's, Juliana, Andrew Scott.
Andrew Scott.
And the Hogpriest himself. And so he, like, meets Sherlock on this building and basically is like, I forget what exactly was happening, but he was like, you have to kill yourself if you want to, like, save all these people, basically. And then Moriarty, like, kills himself in front, and he's like, I'm gonna do it too. And so he, like, shoots himself in the head, I believe, in front of Sherlock, and then Sherlock jumps off the building. And that's the end of season two. Everyone had to wait 2 full years.
2 years.
To find out what happened.
Season 3.
Okay, I have so many questions.
please ask.
Okay, number one. Do we know, like, did they keep the seasons far apart because it was, like, a scheduling conflict? Did they want to make people wait? Or were they just, like, sipping on their coffee? Or was he, like, working on Doctor Who? That's number one.
I honestly have no idea, to be honest with you. It could have been scheduling.
I don't either.
But also the episodes, I mean, they maybe were just in production for a really long time because each episode was 90 minutes long. So it was like shooting like 3 movies.
And also the episodes, they, like, the quality themselves, I actually haven't seen it in a while, so this might be a lie and it might be worse than I'm remembering, but if I remember correctly, like, quality-wise, they were really good.
Yeah, and I bet they still hold up.
It seems like they would take a long time to write. So there's that as well. But I don't know. I also think part of it, like, in my mind, part of it is just that they were like, we're gonna make them wait because now they're expecting to wait and just out of spite. I'm sure that's not what it was, but in my mind, that's what it felt like.
They probably had fun teasing the fans.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm laughing at our producer Madeline's face. Okay, my second question is, I feel like we've talked a lot about, like, the experience of the fandom and, like, where it was on Tumblr, but I would like to, you know, nibble at another little plate on a main course. And this is such a weird analogy that I'm going with. Anyways, I want to kind of go back to the beginning and be like, okay, well, what is Sherlock about? Like, I know we talked, it's literally about Sherlock, but, like, what was it about it that made it so good?
Well, I think number one, the writing was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just fun to watch like a crime series that was like super, like it was really clever. Also, like it was just well done. Like it's like a well done show. Like there was really cool effects, and like you would see like him deducing things, and it would like show up on the screen like what he was thinking in his head, sort of.
Yeah, which honestly, and not to contradict that, but I am going to contradict it a little bit and say that some of those scenes, some of those scenes where he's like deducing and the writing's appearing on screen, I go back and watch them now and I'm like,
all super over the top.
That it was very dramatic, but that's also I think part of the appeal is that like Sherlock the character himself was a little bit of a dick. And
I'd say a lot of
and Tumblr at the time was obsessed with characters they hated. Like that's just like the love that people felt for characters that were absolute assholes, unparalleled.
Well, because it's like they'd be an asshole, but then they'd be like, oh my god, here's like a here's a photo set of Sherlock being like a cute little puppy. Look how cute he is. Look at this
a small bean.
Look at these facial expressions he's making. OMG. Like, so it was like that like juxtaposition of like this character being an asshole, but here's them making a really cute face. Like,
yeah, and you're like, okay. Also, I think the star power of Benedict Cumberbatch helped.
Yeah.
He was definitely Tumblr's white boy of the millennium. So there was
that. Was that his first big thing? Or
yes. Like, I think that was the thing that really brought him into, like, yeah, like, public consciousness. Yeah. It was like, whoa, look at this guy.
I would say Andrew Scott as well. And thank God Andrew Scott now has Fleabag to sort of shake off Moriarty. Because he's honestly, he's much better in Fleabag than he is in Sherlock.
He's so good in Fleabag.
Unhinged. He's actually great in Sherlock, but he's like
it's like so crazy.
Like Juliana, you would be shocked because he's so chaotic. It's crazy.
Wait, say more.
This is like it's very theatrical. His performance, like it's just I don't know. You can tell he's having a lot of fun.
Yeah, like, and he's also, like, he's playing someone who's crazy and murderous and insane. And so, as we know, he's intense as an actor, I would say, and, like, very dedicated to doing the extremes of whatever
character
may be.
I'm, like, smiling like a psychopath because I'm, like...
Yeah.
No, honestly,
well,
you should
Fleabag,
watch it, Juliana.
That means that he's, like... completely lovable and absolutely like so endearing, and then for Sherlock it means he's terrifying
but also kind
so
of
scared
fun to watch.
I was so scared of him.
He's very powerful and like he could the whole time you're like, oh my god, he could kill Sherlock at like any moment, like he could just do it, but like he likes playing like the mind games, so
and I feel like they had good chemistry too, Benedict Cumberbatch and Andrew Scott, so like that was a big part of the show. I feel like part of the Sherlock appeal was also like this like pseudo-intellectual like
what's the term? Sapiosexual people who are
oh my god I just got chills all over my body. That is the cringiest thing anyone has ever done online.
Do you know what that is, Juliana?
Please explain.
Sapiosexual.
Please explain to me and our listeners. I have no idea what that is. It sounds like human sexual.
It's people who like claim that they're like sexual, that their sexuality is that they're like attracted to intelligence. And like that's like the defining factor of their sexuality.
As opposed to like being attracted to men or women or non-binary people, it's like, no, I'm attracted to
your brain.
Which is like that's everyone, you idiot. You absolute fool. That's not a sexuality.
So I feel like that was anyone who was like, I'm sapiosexual was like, Sherlock is my show.
Yeah.
That sounds like a skinny white boy who's like read like faux cult and then Catcher in the Rye and is like, yeah, I'm a sapiosexual. Yeah. That's what that sounds like.
Yeah. Huge.
We all had this one acting teacher, or at least I heard that this one acting teacher's favorite clip of acting was Andrew Scott as Moriarty.
Oh yeah, at the end of season one, the last episode, they're at this like pool.
No, I mean he does some amazing work in that show, and honestly, you probably should watch it, Julia.
I think you'd like it. The acting's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan of theatrical acting.
But I think the big thing that became like the big pull that like people were like, oh, I want to watch this show, was the main ship, which was John Locke, which is people shipping Sherlock Holmes with his BFF, Dr. John Watson, who was played by Martin Freeman.
For those,
and in the show they were roommates. They like lived together. They were flatmates. Oh my god!
They were roommates.
Can I get one more quick question? Is each episode like taken from one of the original books, or do they deviate a little bit?
Well, each episode is like, it's like loosely based on a story, a Sherlock Holmes story. Like,
yeah.
Usually some of the titles are like a play on the titles of like Sherlock stories. Like, I think the very first episode is called A Study in Pink, and the actual story is called like A Study in Scarlet or Red or something. So they're all like inspired by existing Sherlock Holmes stories, but they're not like exact.
Yeah, and there's, who's the woman in, is it season one?
Irene Adler?
Yes, Irene Adler.
Who's the dominatrix?
Yeah, so she's an actual character in the books, and in the show, she's like, she's insane. That's where the phrase, I am Sherlocked, came from, which is like what people started using to refer to themselves as fans of the show. But like, she has this phone that says, I am
Locked.
There's
like a 4-digit code.
You need
to unlock the phone.
Yeah. And I don't remember exactly why.
There was like important like government
information
or something. I think she had like pictures of people.
Yeah, I don't know.
He needed the phone.
There was a lot going on. Yeah. It turns out that the passcode was S-H-E-R, so it spelled out, I am Sherlocked.
Karen, can we please post the picture
of Karen in her I am Sherlocked t-shirt?
Okay. Listeners, there is a photo of me that exists where I'm wearing like one of those like giant hats with the ears that's like fuzzy and has those like balls dangling at the end, and I'm wearing a shirt that says I am Sherlocked,
looking stoic, if I may say so myself.
Looking just sad. Yeah, we might post it on the Instagram, who knows. Okay, anyway, I feel like we were about to talk about John Locke, yes?
We were, yeah. Okay. So, this ship was huge. And
she was huge.
I understand why people shipped it, because they did have, like, a lot of chemistry. Mm-hmm. They were, like, a great duo. Mm. They kind of bounced each other out, whereas, like, Sherlock is, like, this genius who's, like, off the walls, and he kind of is chaotic, and he doesn't really always make like the best choices, I feel like.
Yeah.
And whereas like John, the way they kind of adapted John's character was that he was like coming back from Afghanistan, and he was like he was a doctor in the army.
Oh wow. Mm-hmm.
And I think he was injured, right? Because he walked with a cane in the show.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
So he's like come back to London, and then I think somebody like introduces him to Sherlock, and then they immediately move in together. because they both need like a roommate. Then they start working together. Mm-hmm. So, and John's very more like measured and practical and rational.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And so they're like, it's like a good dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I also think it's like, in a small way, an enemies to lovers situation.
Mm.
Where like, they were never really enemies, but they definitely didn't like each other at the beginning. And
yeah,
then
they like butt heads.
Yeah. And eventually they like, I think like part of the whole point of at least Sherlock's character arc is that he like kind of is improved exponentially by being John's friend. Like, he just learns to be more human and like empathize with people, and sort of less of a high functioning sociopath as he is described.
Oh yeah.
wait, he describes himself as a high functioning sociopath, Or other people.
Yes, and that was... No, he describes himself as a high-functioning sociopath. Well, other people also
describe him as a psychopath. Like, I think there's... I forget who, but one of the characters is like, he will murder someone someday. Like, somebody says that to John before, like, he moves in with Sherlock. He's like, he will murder someone one day.
Yeah.
That's how Sherlock is viewed by, like, every other character in the show, basically, is that he's, like, an insane person.
And that's kind of part of the appeal. I feel like that really affected the fandom too. The like high functioning sociopath thing, I saw people describing themselves as that on Tumblr because of this show.
Yeah. Oh my
which God. Which is like, that's not, you can't.
My mouth has been agape this entire time since we started talking about high functioning sociopaths.
But yeah, that was a huge thing on Tumblr. And it was just so like, in retrospect, so annoying. Like,
yeah. That people.
A lot of people were just. Really annoying about how smart they thought they were because they watched this fucking show. It's like, no.
Well,
this,
and
this is a BBC show.
I actually, when I was going back on my Tumblr in preparation for this episode, I saw a post that actually I think was really interesting where someone basically was talking about how kind of each fandom on Tumblr sort of takes on the personality, like, of the show that they are, like, the fandom of. And I think that was so true for Sherlock because people were like, I'm making deduction. Like, because Sherlock still thinks that he's, like, deduces and that's how he, like, solves crimes and stuff.
Oh my
so, like,
God.
The fandom was, like, constantly, like, making deductions and, like, analyzing the tiniest details that they saw in the show, especially because there was, like, so few episodes. People would go back and watch everything. Like, they would literally look at, like, somebody shifting their eyes and being like, this is what that means. This is what I believe. This, like, this is what that means. Like, there's this scene, I saw one specifically where, like, there's a scene where Sherlock first meets Moriarty. He doesn't know who he is because he's, like, pretending to be someone else and he's dating this scientist that they're friends with. what was her name? Was it, like, Molly or something? I don't remember.
I think it was Molly.
Sorry, Molly. But, so, he's, Molly. Like, dating this girl to get, like, close to Sherlock, but he's, like, pretending to be someone else. And, like, I saw someone, like, being, like, this little shift in his eye movements, that was, like, him breaking character and being Moriarty, and that's what this means, and blah, blah, blah. And I was, like, maybe... maybe he did that on purpose, but maybe he just looked over at something else, you know, like,
yeah.
So, like, that was so that was like a huge thing in the fandom was like constantly I know like as actors were like he probably was just looking over at something. And so like I just feel like you'd see all these different like analyses and you're like that could have been intentional but like probably wasn't, and it got to the point where like people so like strongly believed that John Locke was going to become canon. And that was like a huge thing of shipping them is like people so strongly believed that the show was moving in that direction. And that
and that's part of the backbone of Tumblr, I would say, is just teens, like young, vulnerable queer teens allowing themselves to be queer baited by shows that they love because they just so strongly believe that eventually they're going to get what they want. And they never
do. But also...
And I say they, but really, it was me. I was definitely one of those teens who was like, John Locke, of course they're going to make it canon. They have to.
I was like, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love if it did.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wait, was the fan base that you all, I have a couple questions about the fan base, because what was the fan base, was it mostly your demographic, or was it just mostly your demographic that you were interacting with on Tumblr? Because it's, like, something that aired on the BBC, but, like, we're all American, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. So I was just wondering, like, obviously Tumblr, like, was a thing for, like, teens and tweens, but... Was that the biggest part of the fandom, or was it like, oh, actually, it's like the fan base, or are we differentiating between the fandom and the fan base? I'm asking a lot of questions here that I don't know if they're necessarily.
This is a little bit complicated of a question.
I think that I would say, I don't know, because it is hard to know, really, because I was so much a part of the Tumblr fandom, and so for me, like, that was it, and it was big, and so I feel like that was generally, like, at least in terms of influence on the writers, like, I feel like the Tumblr fandom was
and the biggest, loudest.
But I don't know, because the loudest, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. There probably were. It did appeal, I think, to like a wide range of ages and genders and what have you. But definitely not in the sense that like like people my dad's age were not like, they're gonna make John Muck canon. There was no concept of what John Muck even was.
Although I do feel like I remember when season 3 came out, people feeling like that there was some like fan service in there.
Oh, and there was, absolutely. Because remember there was that I just choked. Hold on. Let me
Karen, oh my god. Karen, like I wish you guys could my eyes. See okay, what wait. We are seeing on our Zoom, but Karen literally just choked. On nothing.
Okay. I have composed myself. What was I gonna say?
Fan service, season 3.
I got so excited. Okay. Season 3, hugely, hugely fan service. And one of the most fan service moments I've ever seen in any TV show is there was that like weird dream. Juliana's still losing her mind.
Anyway,
this is really funny. There was that weird like dream/daydream sequence where Sherlock is reliving the moment where he falls off the building, except he falls with Moriarty and they kiss as they're falling.
Oh yeah, it wasn't like extremely clear. I remember people were like, they're kissing. Like it was like the back of their heads.
Yeah.
And it was like,
but they could have been kissing.
But also I think, I don't remember if the scene was at the end of season 2 or it was like a flashback at the beginning of season 3, but it was like John at Sherlock's grave and he gives this whole like monologue about like their friendship, I think, and then he's like, and one more thing, like please don't be dead, like please stop being dead. Like it's kind of plea for like Sherlock to not be dead, even though he's literally standing at his grave. And people were like, oh my god, he loves him.
Yeah.
And then of course Sherlock wasn't dead. And he was actually gone for like 2 years. So when Sherlock comes back, John is like engaged to this woman. To marry. And then the episode 2 is their wedding.
What other engaged is
His fiance's name is Mary. No.
Her name is Mary. That's what I meant.
I'm not engaged to be married. Engaged betrothed. To the woman Mary.
Named Mary. That's really funny.
And then he's best man at John's wedding and has to give like, and he's like stressed out about giving like the best man speech, and all of a sudden it's like a sitcom.
The wedding. That was a whole thing. Yeah.
So I feel like, and then I didn't watch the special, but the special was like Victorian or something. Either. Like it was like set in the time period of like the actual Sherlock Holmes story. So that kind of feels like a fan service thing. That feels like something the fans really
wanted. I think Sherlock is a good example of there definitely being a dialogue between writers and fans, because it feels like the like fan presence on Tumblr for these shows specifically during this specific time was so strong and so like a staple of the internet that like the writers were aware of it. And so they knew. They were like definitely in conversation with what the fans wanted and like would sometimes throw stuff in for the fans just like as fan service, but then also would definitely purposefully not do things that the fans wanted to happen.
Do you think that made the shows better or worse?
Hard to say.
I think as a fan during that time, the fan service was definitely something I liked. Like I was like, great, I'll take this. But I don't know, some of it did kind of get a little like, well, this probably would not have happened had it not been for you.
And I think fan service, you know what I mean? It can sort of be like manipulative in a way, like especially if it's veering towards like queer baiting. So which it was.
It always was. Like I cannot believe as a grown adult woman that I am now that I just let myself be essentially
for
gaslit
years by a television show.
By several television shows at once.
Karen, can you explain I mean, like, I feel like it's pretty self-explanatory, but more about queerbaiting. Because I feel like we should talk more about that.
Of course.
Like, can you just explain what it is and, like, where it shows up and that sort of thing?
Yeah, totally. So queerbaiting is kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's when writers will create tension between two characters of the same gender that makes it seem like they're going to be together, or like there's some sort of like romantic tension there, possibility, but it never actually comes to light. Like, it never actually happens. And so the queer baiting part of it is like baiting people into watching your show because they think they're going to find some representation and then never actually giving it to them, which...
Yeah. It was really rampant in like a lot of shows that had fandoms on Tumblr. And it still happens.
And that's not just a fandom thing. That's just like a consuming.
Like, there was
media
a huge thing yeah. with the Supergirl on the CW, that fandom with like queer baiting. And the fans were like really upset. Especially also because some of the stars of the show like made jokes about how like that couple, it was like Supergirl and another female character. And I think there were jokes made about how they would, like, never be together. That would never happen. And the cast kind of, like, was making fun of that ship at, like, a Q&A one time. And the fans were, like, so upset. Because they loved those two characters. They wanted them to be together. Yeah. And there was, like, a lot of tension. I think also because that character was, like, a villain or something. I don't know that much about it.
Mm-hmm. I will say that sometimes, especially in... fandom culture, people will sort of create tension where there is none. Like, sometimes people's ships are just kind of based off of nothing that writers are doing intentionally, but a lot of the time, like, especially with Super Hulock, the writers knew what they were doing. Like, they knew the tension was there. They knew that what they were writing and how it would come across, but they just
they were like, this is fine.
Did anything about it because... That was never, like, the... It was never end game. Like, it was never the intention to have those two characters be together. That was never part of their, like, writing process. But they knew that certain people were watching the show because they thought it might be. And so they, like, played into that in a really manipulative way.
Yeah.
So, fuck that. And don't do queerbaiting, anyone listening.
Don't do that. And you think that this is, like, pretty exemplary of John Locke? One.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And two, endgame? Question mark? Is that another phrase that we use in fandoms?
It's frequently used by just one of my favorite television programs, Riverdale.
Program.
Which is like half of a joke.
Yeah.
That's kind of a joke, but it's also... not anyway, endgame is just basically like two characters that will end up together in the end. So it's like a prime example is like Jim and Pam on The Office are endgame.
Yeah
So that's a phrase that's used in, it's like with ships.
Or How I Met Your Mother, Robin and Ted were endgame in the writer's minds, which was a horrible decision. So anyway,
I feel like we should make a Confessions of a Former Glossary. Fangirl dictionary of all the terms. I feel like this episode I have so many questions because all of this is like so new.
I love it. Actually, of all the things we've talked about so far, I think Juliana, you would enjoy
I honestly
Sherlock
really
the
think
most.
You should give it a go.
So,
and where can I find the program?
Netflix. Yeah. It's still on Netflix. Yeah.
It's on Netflix. And also you won't have to wait 2 years for the next season. So there is just one more thing.
Tell us, Karen.
I would love to touch on.
I know what it is.
In regards to Sherlock. So Sherlock was hugely popular during those years we mentioned, like, whatever it was, like 2012 to 2015. There was another show on air at the same time as Sherlock about the Sherlock Holmes story called Elementary. I don't remember.
A very similar concept that was modern day Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock. But it was took place in Manhattan.
Yes, took place in Manhattan. It was on a different network. It was American,
yes,
I believe.
It was on, I'm looking at, it was on CBS.
That checks out.
So it was like primetime U.S. television.
Yeah, so Sherlock Holmes was played by a man, and then John Watson was played by a woman. So
it was
her name
wasn't
John, I don't remember what it was.
And she was played by Lucy Liu.
I knew she was involved in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lucy Liu.
So an icon. And I never watched elementary, but the fact that these two shows were happening at the same time and like both kind of had fandoms, though elementary like a much smaller fandom. As you can imagine, there was a huge rivalry between these shows.
On Tumblr.
Huge, huge. As one would say.
One we won't mention.
One who is not a friend of the pod.
Anyway. Not a friend of the pod. And it was, this whole rivalry was really so absurd because the big like point of tension was
the
that
ship, I feel like.
People,
yeah.
Was the ships. Yeah. So people who shipped John Locke, which was, as you'll recall, the Sherlock ship, would start claiming that people who didn't like Sherlock and were like elementary fans were homophobic because they didn't ship John Locke. And then people who liked elementary started claiming that John Locke shippers were misogynistic because they didn't like elementary.
And I feel like
Watson
and they would say
woman.
They were
and
racist. Yeah, they would say they were racist too.
Yeah.
Like sexist and racist because they didn't like that John was being played by Lucy Liu. Which
honestly, the elementary fans had a point.
Yeah.
Because John Locke shippers got really insane about this. And this is always something that I think about when I like when I'm trying to think of an example of Tumblr being like an educational space for teens, in the sense that like Tumblr was really the first place where I heard of a lot of like social justice issues and like terms that I hadn't heard of and like kind of figured out my identity because that was a big part of Tumblr culture. But also that kind of turned into something extremely toxic.
Wait.
Just in the sense that like, wait, what?
I was gonna say, oh, something toxic on Tumblr? What?
I mean, yeah, obviously. Yeah. There was so much. But I think that, like, just the, like, weaponization of social justice is really upsetting to me in retrospect. Like, this whole debate, like, there's no need for us to be like, if you like this gay ship, you are misogynistic because you don't like this woman in this other show. Or like, if you like this woman in this other show, you're homophobic.
It also
like,
doesn't make any sense as an argument.
It makes no
and
sense.
And I think like,
it's absurd.
I think honestly, the root of that was just like jealousy. Because I think like, if you watch Sherlock and you wanted John and Sherlock to be together, like, and then you see this other show where John is being played by a woman, where it's like, because she's a woman, it's much more likely that like her and Sherlock would get together, like that ship would happen, even though I don't think it did. And I think it was like strictly platonic on elementary. I don't think that ever happened. But I think you see the show where you're like, oh, it's a man and a woman. So that's way more likely that like on TV in 2012 that they'll get together than this gay couple. Honestly, I think that's like the root of that. But like the arguments that like, it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And it's just quintessential Tumblr to be like, you are inherently problematic because you don't
like
the thing.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was like the social justice warriors of Tumblr.
Yeah. Which I don't like that term because obviously like people use it to be assholes, but
you don't like social
there
justice
is part of it that is based in truth
or inherent and problematic.
It became like an insult on Tumblr if like for someone to call you a social justice warrior.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I've been called one of those by my brothers, but like that's I don't consider myself to be one. But
yeah, well, and like there's actually nothing wrong with caring about social justice like when it comes down to it, but like to take it to the extreme where you're actually, like, hurting people because of it,
like
that's some another...
One might argue entirely, that you should care about social justice.
Yeah, that's, like, an interesting thing about Tumblr, because I think there are some people who, like, self-identified as social justice warriors who would take it too far and, like, just get offended because someone didn't like something that they liked. And that's... I feel like that's sort of how that phrase earned that kind of, like, bad reputation.
That connotation. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right, so that wraps up our big main course meal on Sherlock.
I feel full.
Are you all
satiated?
Well, folks, it was a great talk. What comes after the main course? It was a great talk.
Dessert.
But now we get dessert. And now it's time for...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Controversial yet brave. Controversial yet brave. This is the segment where we talk about our controversial yet brave statements about the topic that we discussed. So does anyone have any that they'd like to start us out with?
I do have one. Okay. Controversial yet brave. I think Sherlock, the BBC show, birthed a new generation of incels.
Please elaborate. Please elaborate.
I think that because of the sort of pseudo-intellectual thing I was talking about before, where, like, white boys would watch Sherlock and be, like, galaxy-braining
I'm going into my mind palace.
Like, think that they are the...
Which is something we should have mentioned, but that's, like, a real thing that Sherlock would say on the show, is that he had to go into his mind palace.
Yeah.
Which is where he would, like, deduce, yeah. I don't know.
And...
That is so stupid.
It's just this, like, this level of arrogance.
And I don't mean that as a compliment. Not to you, to those.
It's dumb.
It was dumb. It was
the stupidest thing. The way that people would talk about this show, the way that people would act because of this show, very incel. Very, like Joker before his time. Like, it was, like, really... and I don't know if it's, like, to the extreme that we, like, think of incels today, but I do think that, like, those behaviors were definitely there and, like, manifested in some really weird ways and just created this, like, generation of people who felt like they were outcasts, but who, like, found themselves in this character that was actually not a good person. So,
well,
yeah, that's what I think about Sherlock. But wow, I also will, you know, I like the show. Obviously, I watched it, like, you know.
Karen, my controversial yet brave kind of goes along with that, I feel.
Oh, I love.
This is Juliana Mancini's controversial yet brave. Give it to us. Controversial yet brave. Even though I have not seen Sherlock, the BBC series, I feel like it created devil's advocate culture.
Interesting.
Culture's like a wrong way, but I feel like it bred those type of like people that are like just play the devil's advocate, like as an exercise for themselves to argue
pseudo intellectual. Yes. Yeah.
That sort of like intense analysis.
Yeah. What we're saying is Sherlock made white boys annoying.
Well.
Yeah.
Karen.
There you go. Well, there's a lot of other things.
That's true. There's a lot of factors that go into that. No, I think that's probably true, Juliana. I would agree.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that Sherlock is entirely to blame for that. I think it maybe helped, though. It definitely helped them feel like they had a place to be like, you just play the devil's advocate.
Yeah, I will say that this is one that I feel weakest on, just because I'm like, oh, now I really want, like, I don't have any strong opinions necessarily for controversial yet brave on this one, because I'm like, I'm just mostly very curious about this series, like you said, because it feels like one I would actually watch. But anyways,
okay, I don't know if mine's gonna make sense. It's still kind of percolating in my brain, but controversial yet brave. I think I don't understand why Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's estate did not sue the BBC for making the series when they are now currently trying to sue Netflix for making the film Enola Holmes.
Are they? I didn't know that.
Yes, because they claim that Sherlock is being too nice to women.
What?
And that's not his character. Like, they're suing Netflix for the film Enola Holmes, where Millie Bobby Brown plays this, like, fake sister that never really, it doesn't exist, but it's, like, from this teen YA children's book series.
Mm-hmm.
And his estate is, like, suing Netflix because the depiction of Sherlock in the film is like, too far away from the actual characterization of Sherlock Holmes.
Wow.
So I'm like, I don't understand why the BBC wasn't sued for Sherlock.
That is so especially fascinating.
Erin.
I know.
I can
tell you the biggest difference between Enola Holmes and Sherlock, the series, and it has a female lead. They're still all white people. They're still all thin people. They're still all cis and able-bodied, but it has a female lead. So that's true. The biggest difference.
But they're not even suing about her. They're suing about
the characterization of Sherlock himself.
The characterization of Sherlock.
Which I think is so interesting because that kind of suggests to me that Sherlock, in order for the estate to be okay with a depiction of Sherlock, he has to be an asshole.
He has to be an asshole. No, literally, that's what it is. So I guess I do understand why the BBC wasn't sued, but I'm surprised they didn't sue them for making it modern, honestly.
Yeah.
For like being like, why does Sherlock have a cell phone?
Wow.
Or like, I don't know. I guess I do understand, but I just think it's kind of ridiculous.
That is absurd. I cannot believe that's happening.
Of course it is.
Also, like, how do they have the power? How do they?
Are you just trying to find a reason?
Yeah, I'm confused as to how they still have the power to sue for something like that when shouldn't Sherlock Holmes technically be in like the public domain by now?
Has it been enough time? I don't know.
Doesn't it have to be like 100 years?
I think so.
Something.
It's absolutely in public domain. Absolutely.
Yeah, so like, how do they have the power to sue?
I don't know.
For that?
But Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a very weird, kind of fucked up man. So he might have. I don't know. I don't know how that all works.
Who knows?
But
who knows?
That doesn't. I would say it doesn't surprise me that they're suing, but it does surprise me that they didn't. Yeah, I would agree. It surprises me that they didn't sue BBC Sherlock.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they did. Who knows?
Maybe they did. I don't know. Although I feel like that would have been highly talked about.
Yeah. But also, like, the BBC... I mean, Netflix has so much money, too. But, like, the BBC is so powerful.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So...
Damn. All right.
There you go.
Well...
All right, friends, that's it for today's episode. Special thanks to our producer, Madeline Parks, and our music producer, Chiara Negroni. You can follow us on Instagram at @formerfangirlpod and on Twitter at @formerfan_pod. You can also email us at formerfangirlpod@gmail.com.
You can find me, Erin, on Instagram and Twitter at Erin Browning with an extra G on the end.
Hey, it's Karen. You can find me... You can find me on Twitter and Insta at @KJessicaStewart.
Send me to another plane. Okay. And you can find me, Juliana, on any social media platform at Juliana Mance. That is GiulianaManc. And you can find the professional stuff on my website at www.julianamancini.com. That is www.GiulianaManc.com.
Bye, friends!